At Midway USA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com. Hunting boots are a critical component of any successful hunt. Whether walking a short distance to your blind or trudging miles through rugged terrain, your feet are carrying the load. Without the right boots, you could give up early and lose out on that trophy just over the ridge. At Midway USA, we make selecting boots for your next hunt easier. With just a few clicks of a mouse, you can decide on what's important, like waterproofing, insulation, size, width, and savings. For just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening to the Western Hunting Hub podcast. And in this episode, I have Mark from Exo Mountain Gear talking about his early season elk hunt that he has planned and something that he's not used to. He's not used to that earlier season. And I think this will be a fitting episode since we're talking about early season hunting, or early season hunting is just right around the corner. And kind of talked about that opening week, but also talking about his game plan for finding elk, and then also women's pack line that they have going on, and maybe some potential changes with Exo Mountain Gear. And if you're a fan of Exo Mountain Gear like I am, this is worth a listen. Talking about mainly elk hunting, touch of packs, but mainly elk hunting, because September is right around the corner. And again, if you don't enjoy this podcast, go listen to something else. And that comes from some recent feedback I got. A pretty useless email that told me two episodes really sucked. So, cool. I know which ones are not good, so don't really need that. So if you got some positive things to say, those are always great. Or podcast ideas, those are great. Remember, podcasts are free, and you can go listen to something else any other time. So thanks again for all you guys that listen and provide quality feedback. Thanks again. Appreciate you all. All right. Welcome back, Mark, to the Western Hunting Hub podcast. Thanks for jumping on again. It's not just second, but maybe third, or I don't even know where we're at. So you're one of the first 10 episodes I had. Now we're at episode 139. And yeah, so we've been rolling for a couple of years now. 2.5 years, I think. So, but wanted to bring you back on because it's elk hunting season right around the corner. People are getting jacked. They're excited. I'm sure you see that with sales and saying, hey, expedite ship. I need that. Forget it. I don't care. I need a quality pack. Now's the time. I'm going to do it. So, and you guys definitely have that pack. So I just wanted to chat a little bit about maybe your fall plans, kind of some strategies of what you like to do and you guys like to do as far as finding elk first and then getting in range, just to have some of those little strategies for guys to listen to on their drive out to see if they can be a little more successful. So welcome back, and if you would, just introduce yourself again.
Yeah, you bet, man. Thanks for having me. It's fun. Yeah, as you said, Mark Hilsine. I work for Exo Mountain Gear, so we make pack systems for backcountry hunting. So the whole idea that whether you're backpack hunting, which is what we do a lot, so we'll be going in on foot and carrying, you know, a week's worth of gear, and then obviously have the need to haul meat out at the end of a successful hunt. Or, you know, we do have different models. So even if you're day hunting, kind of no matter what you're doing, if it's a need where you need a good pack to hunt with, and then the capabilities to haul out heavy loads, that's all we do. Personally, grew up in the Midwest, in Missouri, started hunting there, whitetail, and then basically self-taught, decided, hey, I want to go and start hunting out west. And it was a much different time back then. You just didn't have the resources mm-hmm. of Onyx maps and University of Elk Hunting and YouTube and all the stuff we have now. So it was a much different journey back then. And definitely learned some hard lessons along the way, but just continued to gain hunting experience, and it's been a fun ride. And then fortunately, because of working with EXO, and then we do a podcast called the Hunt Backcountry Podcast, so just gotten to meet a lot of good people. And so it's been fun. I'm sure, like you do, it's fun to have a podcast because you talk with guys somewhat very selfishly, and I get to learn. And then, you know, we happen to be hitting record and putting this out there for other people to learn too.
Yeah. I don't journal or anything like that, but this is my electronic journal of things I've learned. And so one of the episodes I did like 5-6 months ago was with Danny Ferris from Hoyt, on the Stalker Decoy. And I don't like listening to my own episodes, but that's one I'm going to go back to and give it a listen. Like, okay, what did he tell me? He gave me a couple of really good tips just on using that decoy. So I'm going to go back and listen. It's like, okay, I know the library, it's there.
Yeah.
And, this hunt stories are there. So it's just a way to, somebody told me once, it's like, well, your kids are going to be able to listen to this if they want to, or grandkids. I know if my grandpa, I can say this, if my grandpa had a recording of his stories now that he's gone, I would listen to it. I would 100%. Absolutely listen to it, because those stories I heard over and over and over again are fading. Even though they're there, I just remember something about him crawling through a herd of antelope and like poking a doe with his arrow. I don't know. Just grandpa stories that who knows the truth on them, but they're special in that world that they're up in my head somewhere. But nowadays we've got this video or audio. And I'm envious. I have no desire to do video, but I'm envious of those people that have that, as a, their library. 'Cause I wish I could watch grandpa's in his hunting. I wish that'd be something kind of cool, and nothing I'm jumping into by any means. I have a hard enough time as it is. I don't need, I'm not doing a camera thing.
Right.
It's a saturated market. I have no desire to do that.
I'm with you. I would say too, like for the listeners who are hearing that and going, oh, that is cool, but I don't have a podcast or, you know, YouTube channel or whatever. I'm actually pretty, I don't want to say like anti-hunting media by any means, but like personally, like you were talking about, like, I would prefer to not be on video or things like that.
Yeah.
Or even put much of my personal content out there from a hunting perspective.
Mm-hmm.
That happens with the podcast, but even things like photos, man, I've doubled down on trying to like capture as much memory of trips as possible. Not for Instagram, not for anything other than like friends and family, and even honestly myself. Like a perfect example of that is I kind of self-filmed a bear hunt this spring, and it was me and Steve from EXO, and just did it. I didn't care about production quality. It wasn't going to be this hunting film on YouTube. It's on YouTube privately, but being able to like share that link with family and friends, or the investment of like photos going back like a few years to look at trips and going, I'm so glad I took a ton of photos on purpose, because it's so fun to go back and relive that.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would just say for people who have zero interest in YouTube, podcasts, Instagram, like being out there, I 100% agree. I feel you, but still try to capture as much of the hunt and document that in some way, whether it's photo, audio, video, a written journal, whatever, because years later, both you and, like you said, your kids or whoever are going to be glad that you have that to go back to.
Yeah. I had a buddy, here's another kind of cool idea. He just texted me this morning, but Jason, you're going to have to remind me exactly what you guys do. But buddy Jason has a kind of a thing he does on every hunt, and I'm pretty sure he takes a picture, and he likes to take a picture of, like, him and his buddy, and then he'll kind of record, I swear he records something just as a, this hunt was 5 days. We did this, this, and this, and this. And he has just like a little audio of just what the hunt was, instead of like a little journal of this and that. The only journal thing I have is literally this is the year, and this is I put down this sounds horrible, but it sounds kind of like a notch in my belt, but it's like 5 point out of Colorado, or I filled 3 doe tags in Butte County, blah blah blah. That's the extent of it, because I don't like writing. But the he had a kind of a really cool thing him and his buddy did, and it was like a video. That's what it was. He was recording just a video on his phone, like at night in camp or afterwards, saying this is what he did, and now he's got this file in his computer of like all his hunts. I think that was super easy, simple, and a great way to capture some of those memories. So something cool.
Yeah, great.
But anyway, moving on. You are headed to Colorado this year for some elk hunting. Kind of tell us a little bit about your game plan there.
Yeah, so a friend of mine, we elk hunt together most years. He drew a tag in Colorado. It's not like a crazy, hasn't been waiting a lifetime or decades for or anything like that, but had some points and strategically drew this tag. And we were sitting about the same amount of points in Colorado. And so when we started talking about using some of them, you know, the first thing that came to mind is, hey, we both have about the same amount of points. We should both be able to draw this tag. Let's do it. Let's hunt, you know, this unit and use these points. And we started talking about, though, maybe that would work great, but maybe a strategy, and I'm just throwing this out there because I don't know how many guys, you know, maybe with a hunting partner think like this, of what if my buddy's name's Jared. Jared, what if you used your points, drew this tag, we go hunt it, I'm just going to come be a caller, be a packer, whatever. And then we see, like, was that worth it? Was that a great use of those points or not? Is that a unit we want to hunt again or not? And then, so let's say we go this year, have a killer hunt. We're like, heck yeah. He fills a tag. Well, next year I could just draw the same unit. And so instead of both of us using all of our points and going all in on this unit, basically, we're essentially taking turns, right? He's using some points. We're going to go hunt this unit together. I'm fully there to support him. And then if it's great, maybe we'll go back next year. If it's not, maybe we'll sit down together and go, okay, well, now I have a certain amount of points. What's another unit that we'd be interested in, again, to hunt together, but with one tag? So it's something to consider if you guys have a friend or maybe partnering up with somebody with points. Maybe you could get the tag together, but maybe this alternate strategy would work. So that's what we're doing. I'm going to call and hopefully pack out a bull for him. And then if we have time, you know, say we fill a tag pretty early in the hunt, we have another handful of days to hunt. Colorado being Colorado, we could go to a different unit and I could still just purchase an over the counter tag if I wanted to do that. So that's kind of the big picture. Some of the things that are unique for us for this year is we're hunting the opener. That's not something we've typically done. I've hunted basically every part of Colorado's season except for the opening week. And there's just, in the past year, has been very practical reasons for that, with like work schedules and things like that. So hunting that opening week's going to be something fun to check out. And then partially the unit, just kind of seemed like that would be a good possibility. It's a higher unit, some more open country, some broken country to have some glassing opportunity, maybe even catch some elk above timber, above the tree line still, and kind of see what their patterns are. So in a lot of ways, I've hunted Colorado for elk quite a bit, but this definitely feels very much like a first, if you will, just because it's a different time of year, totally different place. Bit of a different strategy, so it's honestly been really exciting to have all of that anticipation and unknown about it.
Oh yeah, and I bet the excitement is high just because those unknowns and trying something new are totally what gets me going. I love the excitement of something new and the new challenge. Even not that elk hunting isn't enough of a challenge, but sometimes it just be daunting. Dude, enough. Of like it'll just take the wind out of your sails. But another thought is, you're saying you guys' strategy is statistically, depending on the unit you drew, but statistically, I'm sure it shows you both would not fill your tag. So, correct. And then that adds in the economical piece of it. Both dropping $700 as a non-resident, maybe, I'm assuming your buddy's a non-resident. is tough to do. And so you get that little bit of resentment of like, okay, we're always working on you. How about you're calling for me, but maybe someone's a better caller. So you're, it's just this weird dynamic of, well, we both got $700 on the line, but we want to fill it, but yet we're enjoying just calling and having a good time. So it's, I am totally in that same boat. I think that's a great strategy. And my dad and I are going to do the same thing. Not this year, next year and in future years of, we're just going to worry about one tag first and go back to the store and pick up another one. That's the great thing about Colorado. You don't have to make a decision. You can just go and have a good time.
Yeah. And I just think it's a very, it's obviously a big factor of what goes into a strategy like this is who are you hunting with, right? Do you have that go-to hunting partner, or, you know, maybe it's like for you guys, maybe it's your dad, maybe it's your brother, your cousin, whatever, but like, even not only thinking of doing that once, but just thinking together in a hunting partnership, what's a strategy that we can do for multiple years? And obviously it takes guys who are willing to be somewhat selfless and share in success. And I mean, it's not like a cliche or something I'm just saying, but if we go and he kills a bull, much less an amazing bull, I am going to be just as happy as, you know, for him. And honestly for me, like I was there, I was part of it. I'll be just as happy as if I was the guy who released that arrow. And that's something that's been proven, like with my buddy Jared, for example, is that in years past, he's called in bulls for me, I've called in bulls for him. Like, it's just very much a team effort. And it's a lot of fun when you're not worried about dealing with drama or somebody's selfish or crabby or whatever.
Yeah. I had a great episode with Colin Cottrell. I don't know if you know who he is, but he really cool guy he was talking about that. Our whole episode was just surrounding yourself with good people. And if you got that good hunting buddy or people around you that you have that like-mindedness in your hunts, then it doesn't matter. You're rooting for each other and not tearing each other down, but you're rooting for each other and you're excited about that. I've got that with one of my buddies for sure. And he called in one of my last bulls for me. And we still, it was just really nice to have somebody that literally said, this one is yours. It's like, it is yours. You're shooting this bull. And I called one in for him a few years earlier. And it was just one of those awesome, awesome stories where we should have doubled up that day on the first bull. We almost did. We were so close to doubling. It was awesome. But yeah. Anyway, yeah, the who you surround yourself with in your hunting camp is why I literally go with just a couple of buddies, my dad. Otherwise, I'm by myself. it's hard to find good people that you can share that sentiment and share that like-mindedness and be okay with joking around and talking to for like 5 days straight, 20 hours a day. So
yeah, and we get a lot of questions on like, hey, how do you find a good hunting partner, or like vet that they are going to be a good hunting partner? And for most guys, there's so much investment for, you know, a hunting trip, and a lot of guys it's out of state, right? So you're talking like, okay, this is for most guys my 1 week off of work. It's my time that I have, and it costs me a good chunk of money and time away from family and et cetera, et cetera. It's like, it's a big risk to go do that with someone when you don't know them well, or that you just may not get along with or whatever. So I just always encourage guys, like, find a way to do something. Like, if you're thinking of going on this hunting trip with some dude that you've never done a trip with, Do something close to home, go backpacking, go do a long hike, like ideally something with some level of adversity so you can kind of see how they handle that type of thing. So that's one thing. And the other thing is, don't be afraid to just say no. Like, I've talked with so many guys who basically, I don't want to say been guilted into a hunt, but almost out of like obligation have say like, okay, I have this good buddy at home, we're great friends, like we hang out, whatever, but that doesn't mean that friend is like the right guy to go on a backcountry trip with and live for a week, right?
Yeah.
And you just have to be really honest about that stuff, because again, the time you do have is limited, and stuff can happen for sure. Like, things can go south. Not every moment out there is going to be peachy, no matter who you're with, but it just, you don't really want to risk having a terrible week because you didn't quite realize that, hey, this is not the right person to do this with.
Well, I'm on your website right now, and there's a little space between the XO Mountain Gear logo and FAQ section at the top where you could just have hunting buddy dating app. So there you go. XO going to start a new dating app on finding your hunting buddy.
Dude, in a way, we almost do. So, like, we just released the podcast on Wednesday, a couple days before recording this, and it was like a listener story about this guy from Texas. He's going to Idaho, and long story short, he was going to go with some people. Now he's going solo. And so we were kind of telling his story. And this podcast has been out for 36 hours at this point, and I've already had 5 people email the podcast email and be like, hey, if you don't mind, could you share my information with, I think the dude's name's Taylor. Would you share my info with Taylor? Because I'd be really interested in talking with them or maybe going hunting with them. Like, so in a way, we have, I know for a fact, like, connected people who've heard stories on the podcast and then ended up reaching out. So
that's cool.
The full app of, like, Hunting Center is not there yet, but we have made some connections.
Yeah, just an idea. Throw it out there. You already got the full business plan model. It's already,
I've got nothing else to do, man.
No,
I should do it.
No. So opening weekend should be a good time. I think I love the opening weekend. It's one of those challenges of kind of needing to be there a day early and kind of claim a spot or two. If that's the kind of, if it's a high pressure place. But one thing I really like about that early season is you still can find bulls talking, and absolutely find bulls talking. And then they're also still working. They are just starting their herd dynamics. I love that. I absolutely love it because they're with a bunch of cows this time, or it's the young bulls with the cows this time. And then there's big bulls all by himself, and he's susceptible. He's easy to kind of talk to. And so it's a really great time. And I've noticed, like, that opening, I'm really curious to see how you guys' hunt goes. Cause I've noticed the opening day can be like the best opening day, in the first half of Sunday can be the best, or whatever day it's, I guess it's not on a weekend anymore. And then it kind of tapers off and then pecks back up somewhere around that Labor Day weekend. So I'm curious to see how that goes for you. But
yeah, I am too, man.
What kind of strategies you got in mind for, I'm sure you and your buddy Jared have talked about, hey, we're going to try this and that for early season. What's the game plan of finding elk? Let's go say with finding elk.
For sure. So obviously e-scouting is where everybody starts. It's where we start. Again, we're going into a unit we have not been in. We didn't get a chance to take a scouting trip and put boots on the ground. So e-scouting has been critical. And, you know, I've just learned in my experience, like, do as much e-scouting as you can and still hold that loosely, right? Because there's been times where I've e-scouted and been so confident in something, and then you get there and it's like, oh, this is not at all the way I thought it was going to be. And then vice versa. There's been spots that I've like, I'm going to put this down, like, e-scouting wise, and maybe it's okay, but it doesn't seem great. And then you get there and it's fantastic. So, you know, not only e-scouting from that perspective of like, okay, elk need food, water, cover. Here's where I think those pieces come together. But obviously a huge part of e-scouting is just access. So not only what can you access, but then what is the common access? Therefore, where is the hunting pressure I most likely going to be? And start to look at those dynamics of access. You know, sometimes you see roads, for example, and this isn't unique to Colorado, but you'll see roads on things and you immediately think, okay, there's a road, that's bad, let me avoid it. Sometimes you got to dig deeper and actually see, is this a road that's even open anymore? Some roads are closed permanently, and then some roads close, like, based on dates seasonally. So you can't just, for example, look and go, okay, here's a road, and either assume a road means there's going to be pressure, I want to avoid it, or on the flip side, assume, hey, there's a road here, that means I can use it for access. So a lot of times doing things like that, like you got to get into national forest and they have like their MVUMs, which is motor vehicle use map. It's going to show you what roads are actually open or what are the seasonal dates of roads and all, you know, that whole strategy.
I like that. And I know you, that just made me learn something about myself. That's totally what I focus on, is more the aspect or the access than, than the actual terrain and cover and looking for a bedding area or a feeding area. I think I feel I'm way more, I use that way more just for that access. I suppose I need to learn a little bit more about trying to find those bedding and feeding areas, and I put that together and heck yeah. But no, I like that. Yeah. You taught me something about myself.
From a super high level, I would say, like, when you think of e-scouting, think almost of two different categories, right? Like one, e-scout for elk, and then two, e-scout for hunting. So meaning like hunting pressure, hunting access. Again, there's a balance there. You need access depending on what type of capabilities you have or how physically you want the hunt to be, but then also anticipating where hunters are. So on one hand, I'm e-scouting, looking for elk habitat, etc. And then the other hand, I'm e-scouting, looking for hunters, or even what are my own access points. And then when you try and bring those two things together, now hopefully you're finding some sweet spots. So that's been something I kind of always do. And then in particular for this hunt, we are going to be able to get in there the day before the opener and do some glassing. And this country lays out pretty well to do some glassing from some certain key areas. So again, finding those glassing points, where can we get and be efficient and let the glass find some elk for us before we just start burning up miles. And so that's going to start the you know, before the hunt even begins, getting in there a little bit early and doing that. You know, when it comes to glassing points, just thinking through things like how much country can I see? What's going to be a good vantage point? Even what way is the sun going to be? Is this going to be a point where I'm looking to glass all day, all hours of the day? Or is this very specifically like, hey, I'm going here in the morning, but then you realize, oh, I'm actually right into the sun. It's actually going to be difficult to glass here in the morning. This would be a better evening spot, for example. Oh. So thinking through those things can be pretty key.
Yeah, I guess I had never thought about that. That makes a lot of sense. Because you're just, instead of just getting there, like, this is kind of hard to see.
Yeah, I mean, but you don't want to be staring straight into the sunrise or straight into the sunset. Obviously, you can get that sun at your back, use that to your advantage, and then have that sun not in your face, but exposing kind of the hillside, the mountainside that you actually want to see, help those animals pop and give you really good visibility. So again, that's not always a factor, but it definitely is a factor to consider when you're looking for glassing spots. And then when it comes to glassing spots, just nothing beats, thankfully, with the great imagery we have these days and apps like 3D terrain. So you may find a glassing spot and look at a strategy for how to get there, and then drop a pin there and then get in the best 3D mode you can from that waypoint, and then look and go, what kind of ground can I see? Maybe if I move this glassing point a quarter of a mile to the north, I'll actually be able to actually see into more country the way the basin lays out, for example. So again, that's e-scouting stuff, but using that to your advantage to, before you get there with boots on the ground, try and give yourself perspective and put yourself there with 3D imagery to see what you're going to be able to see from that glassing point. So Onyx Maps has a 3D mode now. Go Hunt has a 3D mode. There's a bunch of other apps out there that are hunt specific. And then I just still always fall back to using Google Earth and really using as many of those resources as you can to get a better feel for it. It's really just helpful to try and use as many different sources of imagery as possible to give you you know, they're all taken at different times, have different perspectives, sometimes different qualities. So you just want to try and cross-reference as many of those as possible.
Yeah. And keep an eye on those ridge lines in that open country. It's like right where in the morning, right where that open country or open hillside, like the north face slope kind of meets that east and northeast-ish like aspen pockets where they're bedding. It seems like majority of my elk I find are coming right down that tree line, and then they dive on into the cover, into the aspens. Just been a heavy, heavy travel route for so many elk that I've found. And then Onyx now has like an enhanced 3D. So for people out in the plains, I haven't tried it yet. I just saw on their new feature video. So flatlanders can go and emphasize the 3D so it sticks out even more. Because you're at where you are in eastern South Dakota, you can't really see like a little drainage. It just all looks 3D mode looks flat. So
yeah, and that's I have played with that in Onyx. It's really helpful. That's cool. Years ago, and this is still the case, but like that's a trick that I learned from a buddy of mine, Jason Wright. And you could do that. I mean, I'm talking like 10 years ago in Google Earth, like when that was the only option. Mm-hmm. You can change the scale and make it more drastic. So like if you think, I think by default in Google Earth, for example, it defaults to like, okay, here's the scale is just one. Like that's how extreme it's going to show you elevation change. If you get in there and bump that to like 1.2 or 1.3, it basically exaggerates elevation change. But I've actually found that to be more realistic to what it feels like when you're on the ground going, oh, that mountain's way bigger than I thought it was on Google Earth.
Yeah. Huh. So you got your spot. You've kind of, by now, I'm assuming you guys got a bit of a game plan because we're coming up close here. What's your game plan on the ground for closing the distance? Like, what's your guys' style of we got elk located and we're going to close the distance from where we found them to getting in close?
Yep. Yeah, I think to be honest with you, still struggle sometimes because there's hunters with a style, right? So I think of, like, I know the born and raised guys well. They're obviously known for being mobile and bugling and calling and finding that bull that wants to talk.
Yeah.
And then I know other guys who are much more methodical, slower, maybe do even for elk more spot and stalk, things like that. And I feel like for me, I don't want to be stuck on a way or a style. And I try to, in the moment, think through the dynamics of what I feel like would work best here and now. So how vocal are the elk? How visible are they? Are they herded up? Are bulls still so low? Are there satellites running around? So through all those dynamics, I'm trying to assess what I think is going to be the best approach in terms of actual hunting approach. You know, again, going back to this hunt, we're going to start even before opening day, be glassing. So really we're going into this hunt with multiple options of, okay, if we go in here and we spend 2 days from this area and don't glass elk, like here's where we're going to move to. And I think that's really important is knowing, obviously everything goes out the window if you find elk or you're chasing bugles or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. Like at that point, you're just hunting those elk. What's really important is when you don't find those elk to hunt, how predetermined is your plan? And I'm not saying everybody needs to do this, but I think it can be a very helpful exercise to go through and say, all right, we have 7 days to hunt. Well, let's think through the plan for worst case scenario. And by worst case scenario, I just mean we're not finding elk. And so sometimes predetermining, all right, if we're not finding elk, we're not finding fresh sign, et cetera, here's how much time we're willing to commit to this area. And then when that time's up, here's where we're going, the next spot. And then how much time do we think we should spend here? And so on and so forth. Because when you're when you get on that hunt and you're in the middle of it, sometimes it's just harder to make decisions or to really overanalyze things in a way where you're not being decisive. And so I think in some ways it's helpful to predetermine as much of that as possible and say, all right, we're going in here for whether that's a half a day or it's 2 days or 3 days. But if we're not finding elk, hunting elk on very, very fresh sign, like very fresh sign, if that's not happening here, boom, after so long, we're going there. So we've kind of done that for this hunt of, okay, here's how much time I think we're going to spend here. If that doesn't pan out, here's where we're going. And some of those are different areas, but some of those areas also have different types of cover and therefore different hunting strategies associated with them, right? So we may go from being glassing open country and making an approach on a bull, and then there's points on this hunt with this unit where we may be into thicker, darker timber with a different calling strategy just based on how things go.
Yeah, one of my biggest pet peeves is when avid veteran hunter whatever has a one style and said this works, that never works, that never works.
Yeah,
there's yep. always exceptions. And I always tell new hunters as I'm working with them, they say, well, what do deer like to, it's like, it always depends. And so and then we go into a conversation of this happens, then this happens, and maybe this could happen, so I'm going to respond in this way. So I really appreciate that flexible style and admire that, because it has to be that. I think you're going to be a better hunter by having a little bit of that aggressiveness when you need to, like the born and raised guys, and then being a spot, having that thing in your toolbox of when I have to spot and stalk. I hear Remy Warren talking about having to spot and stalks in their beds, like, oh my gosh, I don't know how they do that, but having that piece and slow plan when you need to. So definitely just adding tools to your toolbox when you need to. So I think that's a good route to go, and I think many listeners would agree.
Yeah, and maybe it's just I'm not good enough at anything.
That's what I'm thinking for me too.
I'm willing to say that.
No, I am humble enough to say I am right there with you. So
this upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why MidwayUSA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
After, I guess let's move on to some exo stuff. I just added a new little accessory, a different company, but a different accessory to my pack, a little FHF gear gun sling, which I think will be all right, and it fixes to the exo pack really nicely. Because there's times I've strapped it to the back of my pack, and That's definitely for when I'm not needing to be as ready. It's like I have a nasty kind of hike and I'm not even hunting. I just want to get there. And then there's times when I need my guns or my bow. So I've got it in hand or I've got it over my shoulder here. What are some of those things that you like to add on to your pack that are, additionals, either your products or other companies' products that, are great additions?
Yeah, we purposely keep things very simple. So we do have some accessories. We have a hip belt pouch and a stash pocket, which is like internal organization. We do have a bow carrier and a rifle carrier, and some different things, but we don't, I'll put it this way. We get requests for things of like, hey, could you guys add this? Could you do that? And most of the time, if it's something that there's an answer for, even if we don't make it, we'll just flat out tell people, hey, here's a great solution. We don't make this. We don't sell this. It works great with our packs. We just purposely like to keep things pretty streamlined and efficient. Mm-hmm. Even amongst our own accessories, I don't add too much. So like my pack, generally, I'll have one hip belt pouch, one to two stash pockets, which are those internal organization items. And then usually the rifle carrier, obviously when I'm rifle hunting. So that's about it. Yeah. The sling you were talking about, it's from FHF Gear. Those guys are great. We know those guys. They make great stuff. And it does work incredibly well with our packs and really solves some problems for guys who use a rifle sling and who want a rifle sling, but have been frustrated with the fact that when you take your slung rifle, put it over your pack shoulder straps, it tends to want to like ride or slide off. And so those guys created a sling, but then it also has, it integrates with the pack in a way where it basically clips to the pack. So it's a sling and it's hands free though, when you connect it to the pack, and it works great. So that's a really good example of a solution, that works well. There's another guy I'm aware of who's a user of our pack who makes like a metal stud that he installs on the shoulder harness. Yeah. It's like the downside to that is you literally have to make a hole and go through our pack. But yeah, there's a lot of solutions out there for different things that work well with our packs. Like another perfect example is Gabriel over at Ivory Holsters, who's right there out of Colorado.
Oh, saw those too. Yeah,
he makes custom Kydex holsters, and he reached out to me it's probably been 4 years ago at this point, and just asked like, hey, what holster do you use with your packs? And I kind of said, well, I've used this, that, and the other one, and they work fine, but you know, they're not perfect for pack use. Like, they're great for your hip, whether that's inside the waistband or outside the waistband, and you can put those on our pack, but I definitely have some ideas on things that would make a better pack specific holster. He's like, oh, really? Like, let me know what you're looking for and I'll make you one. And so, you know, I give him some ideas and feedback, and he just like crushed it on making a holster for the packs. And I was like, dude, this is cool. You should start making them. And sure enough, he did. So that's another example of something that's, I would say, not specific to just our packs because they fit other packs, but like a perfect example of, hey, here's an accessory that works great with hunting packs and meets the needs of hunters. We're not interested in making holsters, for example. So yeah. I'm glad that Gabriel's making them for our packs. I don't care one bit to like recommend him and let him make all the money because he's doing all the work on those.
I do like having the one hip pouch on the left side, and then my firearm does go on that right. And I like having the gun a part of the pack. I don't hunt grizzly country, so that's a totally different story, I think, as far as like gun on your chest and if you leave your pack and all. I don't know. I just don't hunt that country, so I don't have a clue. But I do like that where my gun is just there and I don't even know it because it's got that little 6-8 inches of strap, whatever it is, on the hip belt, and it's not cutting into me. It's there. It's tight, and I had that exact same recommendation just a couple of weeks ago from a buddy. He said, you got to check out those, what's the name of it? Ivory.
ivory holsters. Ivory holsters. Just like elk ivory.
Yep. He said, you got to check these out. And he went and bought one for his XL pack. So did the same thing. So, yeah, I'll have to check those out. Because they are hard synthetic or whatever material, I guess it is.
Kydex. Yeah. So they're custom molded to your firearm, you know, to your specific model. And then just to like highlight quick some of the changes from like, call it a normal holster. Again, that's not meant for pack use, but Gabriel pre-curves the holster a bit. And so obviously when you're wearing a pack hip belt, again, whether it's ours or another pack company, is wrapping around your hip. And so he pre-curves the holster to kind of fit that naturally. He tries to either fully enclose the muzzle end, which he can do on more compact firearms, or if it's a firearm with a longer slide, if it's not fully enclosed, he still wraps it around the end of the slide or the muzzle. And so that way when you're like taking your pack off and it's hitting the dirt, whatever, you're just not getting a bunch of stuff up inside of the barrel, which is, again, a big downside I've noticed in the pack. So there's a lot of little changes that make it really cool for pack use. Again, whether you're using our pack or others.
Yeah. Cool. What are some of those other needs that you've had from customers say, hey, we like this, but we're good.
A perfect example is like rain covers.
Yeah.
And so our packs are very water resistant. We use a 500 D Cordura with like a DWR. And then there's also like a very water resistant backing. So I would say for a lot of guys, do you need any extra protection? Like, let's have that conversation, because if you're the guy hunting archery season and you're in the high country and you get like those passing afternoon showers, the pack's going to shed all that moisture. Great. But that's a different demand than, hey, I hunt Pacific Northwest. It's either constantly raining or I'm in constant thick, wet brush for days on end. Anything that's water resistant eventually has a saturation point. We're just very honest to say, hey, this is water resistant. It will shed moisture great up until a point. And so when you get in more extreme environments, guys going north to Alaska, for example, you know, we get questions about pack rain covers. There's a million pack rain covers out there that will fit our packs. We don't make one. We do have a different solution, and we're always happy to tell you what the pros and cons are of our solution versus an external pack rain cover. And if guys say they want a pack rain cover, go get one. Don't buy our solution if that's what you want. But our solution is an internal waterproof dry bag liner. So the entire main volume of the pack has a very specific dry bag that fits our pack. And your gear goes inside of that, inside of the pack. The big advantages for us, having used rain covers externally in the past, are those rain covers tend to be really noisy. They're not very durable. They tend to redirect water. So like it'll cover the top of your pack, but it's actually going to dump a bunch of that water that it's shedding down between like your neck and your back and still get in the top section of the pack. And then noise, durability, etc. And then they're still not fully waterproof. And this may sound dramatic, but like if you were to fall crossing a creek or a river, I used to like think that was more dramatic than it is. And past years I've crossed a lot of waterways hunting. It's really important. So if you go down with a pack rain cover, it's not going to do anything in a water crossing. So this internal dry bag liner takes things inside, keeps things quiet, allows you to still access the exterior pockets of your pack, true 100% protection, etc. So again, that's like, here's our solution. And then if that's not what you're looking for and you want an alternative, that's a good example of things on the market that we're not going to make, but that work really well with our packs being external rain covers.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I get that same question from some friends as well, just about how I go about the water resistance, or do I have a pack cover, or what do I do? And so, yeah, that's a commonly brought up topic. So yeah. What's this new, I guess I don't even know how old it is. The women's line, youth line. We were just talking about that a little bit. What, what have you guys created?
Yeah, so like basically it goes back to a few years ago. We don't go to all the hunting shows that are out there, you know, like SCI, and there's just like, we could be on the road for a month at a time going to hunt expos and stuff like that if we wanted to, and it would be fun. We just can't.
Yeah.
But we go to a couple shows like Hunt Expo in Salt Lake City, for example, and we really, over the last handful of years, noticed more and more women interested, not only in hunting and in general, but like interested in a good quality pack, because they are going into the backcountry, or they are wanting to pack out meat. They are wanting to do a backpack hunt. And, you know, our packs can fit some women, but there's kind of two things that don't generally work well. Is number one, obviously there's a lot of shorter females out there. And even if you were to take like a female who's relatively tall, call it 5'6", 5'7". If you stand them next to a guy that's 5'6", 5'7", you'll notice that the women have higher hips and actually a shorter torso in general compared to guys on the same height. And so it got really difficult to fit women into packs properly. It's like, yeah, you can use this, but like, we could make it better for you. And so as we saw more interest out there, we just decided, hey, let's do something about this. At the end of the day, I don't care if we sell, you know, 20 of these a year, but like, we just wanted a solution for ladies who wanted to get out and get after it. And so we made, we took our standard K3 packs, took some length out of the frame, made the frame shorter to fit them better. We contoured the shoulder harness as well, so we made it a bit thinner, and then it actually is curved and shaped a bit different just to fit the female figure who's going to have more of a chest than we do. And then made a bag kind of specific now to the shorter frame, and really went from going, hey, here's a pack that can kind of sort of fit you, to now saying, hey, here's a pack that was actually specifically designed to fit you well, but still has a ton of adjustability, still has a titanium frame, really still has all the capabilities of our other packs. And so that was probably two and a half years ago. And we've kind of not purposely kept it quiet, but we've basically said, hey, here this is quietly. And then when we get a lot of questions, we end up selling quite a bit of them, but they're on our website now, but not for purchase. So you still will basically just contact us to order one, but you can go to the website and see all about them, see some field photos from ladies who've tested them. And then if you have any questions or want to order one, you just contact us and we'll work directly with you. But okay. We've had a ton of women running those for a couple of years now. They're great for youth as well. So like a buddy of mine has an 11-year-old that runs one. And then to be honest with you, I have some adult male friends who are just shorter in stature, and they even run that shorter frame. So it just works well for really if you're if you're a male up to maybe like 5'5", 5'6", or if you're a female, again, because their hips and torsos structured a bit different, I would say if you're 5 foot to like 5'9", 5'10", this, what we call the EXS, which stands for extra short, that system would fit you. And then if you happen to be a female who's like 5'10" or up, one of our K3 frames would still fit you well.
Huh. Well, that's what I was going to ask, because I clicked on the link and was like, no, you can't really purchase it, but the info is here. So that's good to know and good to share.
Yeah, we do actually, if anybody's hearing this, because the website says contact us about lead times and et cetera, we do have some in stock right now. So it is something, if you're one of those, hey, I need something for this fall, we could definitely get you guys set up.
Excellent. Well, cool. Good adjustment for the growing need, for sure. I had that same question about women's hunting pants yesterday. So I was like, yep, I know you're struggling, but there's actually a solution now. You just got to contact some of these companies that have made women's clothing. So
Like, for us next year, you'll probably see that become more of a standard product and like in our normal line. Like, I'll probably be on the, will be on the website to buy in the future.
Excellent. So, I'm sure you're going to keep this quiet, but any ideas on maybe a K4? I don't know what you'd need to change, but any, structure. I don't want to be tempted to buy anything new because I love what I got right now, but any things in the works?
Yes. And then I just don't know when. So to be honest, like we are really happy with the K3 pack systems. They've been out since 2019. So it's been several years now, but I will say that, I mean, we worked on the changes from K2 to K3, we worked on for several years and then launched K3. And so quite literally, as soon as we launched K3, it was like, all right, what's next? And we don't say what's next in terms of like, hey, we need to come up with something new to sell something, because the K3 has been out for several years now at this point. So we're clearly not in a rush from that perspective.
Right.
We just always want to try new ideas, challenge our own assumptions, et cetera. And so we've continued to, I mean, for the last 2 years, I don't know that I've hunted in a K3 pack. I'll put it that way. Been testing prototypes, and there's some that we've built that have been, had potential, and there's some that we've built that was like, oh, that sounded great in our heads, but that didn't work. Yeah. And so we just, we take a pretty long cycle of testing and challenging ideas, and again, even our own assumptions, and working on stuff. So, we've been working and testing different ideas, and next year you probably will see an update, but I can't even say that with certainty, just because we're going to continue to test, even on upcoming hunts and things like that. So yeah, the, last spring I had a different pack, and then it was different. Then we just did our death hike in July and had some different tweaks to that pack. And so it's just kind of like an ever evolving, challenge really to test our own ideas and take the time to do that and truly vet it. And then, because we are really happy with the K3 and where that's at, it's like, well, what do we want to change? Because we have a product we love. It doesn't have, like, it would be much easier if we said, okay, here's some major flaws we're trying to fix. That's just not the case. We're trying to take something we really like and go, okay, how can we tweak this, make this better? And part of that is us. But I will say, we legitimately are constantly listening to customer feedback. And we can never accommodate every idea that every customer has, but because we are a small company and because we don't sell through dealers or retailers and we're direct to our customers, I'm talking daily with customers who use our stuff. It would be a much different story if it was like we sold packs to Cabela's or whatever, and then they turned around and sold them, and I don't know who's using it and what they're doing, but like, on a daily basis, we're hearing with people who are using our packs and giving us feedback, and definitely all that is for sure considered.
I just had that conversation a couple days ago about the direct to consumer benefit, and walking to Cabela's and Scheels has some great gear, obviously, and but there's something to be said about those direct to consumer companies and being able to pick up the phone and call and ask a question. I think a lot of people can enjoy that and appreciate it for sure. Well, I'll let you get back to your day, and I appreciate all you guys do, and keep up the good work. Keep following you. Love the podcast. Love the gear for sure, and the packs, and been something I've been sharing. And now this, my buddy's got a fleet of the XO packs, and I'll be keeping using mine for sure. It's been definitely a busy pack over the last 2-3 years. So, That's awesome. Thanks for coming on and chatting again, talking hunting. Good luck on that Colorado early season hunt. And, I'll have to check in later and see how it turned out.
Yeah. Sounds good, man. It'd be fun to swap stories in the future, whether it's for a podcast or just to, hear about your season and talk about hunting.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you.
All right, thank you.
Brave anglers search for the one they call King, but who will take his throne? Tune in to Waypoint TV's Battle for Silver, Saturday, May 18th from 12 to 6 p.m. Eastern, presented by Abyss Battery. Waypoint TV.